the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Well, we all know the importance of planning for retirement. But when do you start? Do you start when you leave college and begin your first job? Or, like many Americans, you wait until your 50s, the kids have now grown up, they've gone to college, and they're out. But what about those key things you should be doing 5 to 10 years before you retire? Whether it's income tax planning or retirement planning. That's going to be the subject of today's show. Joining me on the program is certified financial planner Aaron Wigman. Aaron, let's talk about some of the issues that people are going to be dealing with when they move into retirement. And the thing that really strikes me is a lot of times you're told, well, postpone, defer assets or taking income until you're retired because you'll be in a lower tax bracket. Let's talk about some of the things, if that happens, you should be doing so you don't get into a higher tax bracket when you have to start taking mandatory distributions from your pension. Let's begin there.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people wind up surprised at retirement that potentially they might be in as high or even higher tax bracket when they wind up retiring because they don't have some of those same deductions and credits that they did while they were in their working years. So, I mean, you know, one thing winds up being you're putting money into a 401k that winds up being tax deferred. Maybe you've already paid off your home or you wind up getting interest deductions. Maybe you were itemizing before you wind up retiring. Or there's child tax credits that you wind up having because now all the kids are out of the house. So then all of a sudden, you know, the money that you're taking out, when you wind up thinking about where you're taking it from, is it coming from a completely taxable account where, you know, any sort of, you know, income, interest, dividends, capital gains, all of that's going to be taxable to you? Is it coming out of your tax deferred bucket? So your IRAs, your 401ks, that's going to be ordinary income to you. And then on top of that, you know, depending on how much income it is that you are taking, whether it be your dividends, interest, capital gains, you know, plus the money that you're taking from your retirement accounts, plus your Social Security, you know, if you're over certain thresholds, you know, when you wind up adding all of that up, you're now going to be in a higher tax bracket, you know, just your Social Security. You could be paying taxes on 85% of your Social Security, which is something that I think winds up being a surprise to folks. You know, and then depending on how much money you're taking out of those areas, that also makes your Medicare that much more expensive. So it might be that surprise gotcha, even with Medicare, when it jumps from, you know, only $150-ish dollars a month to all of a sudden you're paying over $300-$400 a month for your Medicare.
Yeah, I want to cover just some key tax brackets here because this is what I call the gotcha tax. Because right now, let's just begin with a married couple. A married couple is going to be in a 12% tax bracket up to $83,550. And if you're single, you're in a 12% bracket up to $55,900. Anything over that, and it jumps 10 full percentage points from a 12% bracket to a 22% bracket. So a married couple can make up to $178,000 and stay in a 22, where a single individual would be $89,000. And one of the things I think that surprises a lot of married couples, Aaron, I think we need to address this, is let's say husband and wife, they're married, they're, let's say, maybe in a 12% bracket. Their income is less than $84,000. All of a sudden, one spouse dies. It's usually the husband goes first. Now the wife has the election to take either her own Social Security or her husband's. Most cases, they'll take the husband's because it's larger. But she's going to lose her own Social Security benefits. But Aaron, also, she could be moving into a higher tax bracket where, as a married couple, they can make $84,000 and stay in a 12% bracket. That changes to $55,000 if she's single.
Yeah, I mean, that winds up being the big surprise when those types of events happen, because they're not necessarily going to be changing their lifestyle at that point in time, but they are going to be impacted by much higher taxes.
And one of the other areas that can impact you in terms of your Medicare premiums, because what people don't realize, just as there's various different tax brackets, There's also various Medicare brackets. There's actually six brackets for Medicare. You can go from paying $150 a month for your Medicare premiums per person all the way up to over $500. And you might be asking, well, you know, how does that happen? Well, let's say that you take a large capital gain, that, you know, you're a little nervous on the market, the market's getting overpriced, you decide to get out of a stock or rebalance your portfolio, and you're taking huge capital gains. Well, what that's going to do is bump you into a higher tax bracket for Medicare. And usually that will last about 2 years, because when Medicare sees that on your tax return, they're going to bump your premiums up. And then, you know, they don't have any way of knowing that you're not going to take a capital gain the following year. So it's up to you to contact Social Security to say, hey, that was a one-time event. You need to be bringing me back down to where I normally am with my income. So there's all kinds of issues like that. I want to talk about something also is a gotcha tax, Aaron, if you'd speak to this. And that's right now, people have to take out mandatory distributions at age 72. And that's usually going to begin around 4% and go up each year. Let's talk about that. And especially for those individuals that are fortunate enough to have multi-million dollar IRA rollovers from their working careers.
Yeah. So I think when you wind up being in that position, you know, here's age 72. I know I work with a few clients that don't necessarily even need those minimum distributions at that point in time. So, you know, a part of that conversation really has to be more around what do you want to do with this money? Like, what are your expectations with this money? So if you need those distributions, certainly you might be taking those, and you know, that's going to be taxable income to you if you need to use it as income to live. But at the same time, there are some other distribution strategies that you can wind up using to minimize that. You know, working with some clients, they have charitable intentions. And so in doing that, you know, each individual, there's a qualified charitable distribution that you can make. Each individual can make up to $100,000. Once they reach 70 and a half, you can actually make these distributions. So anything that winds up going straight to a charity, that's not a taxable distribution to you as the individual, because the charity is benefiting from that. So that's one thing that people can wind up doing there. Other than that, I mean, you know, when you wind up looking, preparing for age 72, it's one of those where maybe you withheld on taking Social Security. So you wind up having a little bit less in taxable income from the time you retire until the time that you wind up having to take Social Security. And then, of course, taking those minimum distributions. Maybe those are good times to start taking some Roth conversions at that point, right? Start shifting some of that money from your tax deferred bucket into your tax free bucket. You know, you're going to have to pay those taxes on it today, but it's just one of those things where you're kind of trying to diversify your taxes across the board a little bit.
Let's talk about another change that is a gotcha that is catching a lot of the surviving heirs or children of estates where there's a large IRA. It used to be that if you passed your IRA on to your kids, they would have to begin taking distributions based on their life expectancy. That was changed in 2018 with the law, and now you have 10 years to liquidate that IRA, including a Roth IRA. Let's talk about that, because a lot of individuals have inherited IRAs from their parents and they don't realize that they have to start taking money and clean that out within a 10-year period or get hit with 50% fines.
I was actually just talking to a potential client about this the other day, that they had inherited some money from their parents back in 2019. And that was the date that Secure Act came into play, sneakily at the end of the year. So what happened there was, you know, prior to 2020, you know, anyone who inherited an IRA was able to stretch that out during their lifetime. And so it really minimized how much of a tax impact that an IRA would wind up making on them. And then, you know, anybody who inherits an IRA now, or, you know, tax deferred type of an account, has to take that out over 10 years. And so just being able to spread that out at that point in time really does make a big tax impact to them. So you kind of have to think through, I mean, for folks who do have a large IRA, who is going to be getting this IRA? Is that going to be, you know, maybe it winds up being a child who is in a very high tax bracket and you're in a very low tax bracket. Maybe that gives you reason to start paying some of those taxes for your child, if that's something that you want to do. At that point, it's not a bad problem maybe for your child to go ahead and inherit. But I mean, it is a problem that you have to at least recognize and come up with a strategy for.
Well, let's talk about something else that is probably appropriate for planning, and especially for individuals that have large IRAs that eventually are going to get hit with higher tax rates because the distributions increase every single year after age 72. Let's talk about Roth conversions and key things that they need to know about that when planning for the future so they don't find themselves in a higher tax bracket. Because think about this. All of a sudden, let's say you're fortunate enough, you have a $2 or $3 million. I've seen people with $10 million IRAs, and you reach age 72, you have to begin mandatory distributions. It's not only going to put you in a higher tax bracket, but also you could get the double or triple whammy. It puts you in a higher state tax bracket if you're in a taxable state, and could also put you in a higher Medicare premium bracket for both of you and your spouse. So let's talk about Roth conversions and minimizing that.
Yeah, I think that's really one of those things that we can project that out for a long time, but it's one of those conversations we wind up having every single year as clients wind up approaching retirement and in retirement too. Just seeing to what level, how much income have we had so far this year? So maybe we're having that conversation in November and kind of estimating how much income have we had, whether it be the interest, dividends, capital gains, whether it be Social Security income, we add all that up and we try to estimate how much income we've had and to what level do we want to, what tax bracket do we want to fill at this point in time? You had made mention before where, there's some significant jumps in tax brackets, right? So whether you're going from the 12 to the 22, from the 24 to the 32, those are some pretty big jumps. And, we don't necessarily want to jump too high, depending on where your expectations for taxes are going to be going in the future.
Now, let's move on also to estate planning, because one of the things I'd just let our listeners know, I can almost, what are the two certainties in life, death and taxes? And every single administration, at least in my career, Aaron, they've changed the tax rates. Sure. Let's just go back. George W. Bush changed taxes when he was president. He was followed by Obama, which raised taxes. He was followed by Trump, who lowered taxes. And so far, Biden would like to raise taxes, but he just hasn't been able to do it. So almost every president has a tax agenda. So let's talk about estate planning, because right now, the low income tax rates that we are in now are going to sunset in the year 2025, mm-hmm. and we're going to go back to higher tax rates at much lower levels of income. And that's also true for estate planning, where most people right now, I think the exemption is like $11.5 million. So most married couples don't have to worry about taxes if you're under $23 million, but that's going to change in 2026.
Yeah, I mean it's a big change that people have to take into consideration. All those estate tax rules that wind up changing. I think the only multi-billionaire that got away with that one was when George Steinbrenner.
Yeah, 2010, there was a window period for 1 year.
No estate taxes.
Yeah, no estate taxes, and he timed it perfect. Exited with $2 billion, no estate taxes.
Yeah, that was quite the exit. So we can't all time it like that, but. I guess that's where you kind of have to put some planning and strategy in place, because when you talk about estate planning, Jim, there's three parties to every estate plan: the people that you love, the charities that you want to support, and the IRS. Which two do you want to choose?
Yeah, I think that one's pretty clear. Let's talk about some of the estate planning vehicles. I like something called a disclaimer trust. Basically, when one spouse passes away, you can leave it all in one trust if the exemption, if your estate is below the exemption, so there's no estate taxes, or if they change the laws and the surviving spouse could be subject to estate taxes upon their death, you can split the trust into an AB trust. So that's one method. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I mean, the fact that you want to have some flexibility with your estate plan is going to be a big deal going forward, because without a doubt, those estate planning laws are going to change. But for a lot of people, having that trust in place is probably one of the last things that is on their list. And it winds up being so, as far as pulling teeth for clients, for some reason, you just don't want to necessarily put it in place, but it's obviously very important. And so being able to put the appropriate trust in place for you right now, and then also considering, Jim, it's not just the federal estate tax laws, it's also the state estate tax laws. So depending on what state it is that you're in, you may have lower thresholds for some of those estate taxes. And so it's taking that into consideration too, where, to your point, that disclaimer trust might be much more important to someone in, say, Oregon than it might be for someone in California.
Yeah, because we had a client that lives in Washington, and Washington has a 20% estate tax that begins at $3 million, even though the federal tax doesn't begin at $11.5 million. And because of the size of the estate and because they wanted to help their children, we helped plan them move out of the state of Washington to another state with no estate taxes so that their assets would pass on to their kids. So that's one method. Let's talk about, let's just say you're fortunate enough, you have a large estate. Let's talk about things like charitable remainder trust. If you have large capital gains, you can keep it going for yourself and kids. And also things like charitable lead trust, which is what Jackie Kennedy did to basically eliminate taxes on over $200 million.
Yeah, I think a lot of those types of trusts, I mean, it's a way for you to be able to, you know, get an immediate tax deduction because you are essentially gifting interest or assets to a charity in essence. And then it's a matter of like whether or not you want to have those assets pulled back into your estate or like given to other beneficiaries, or whether or not you want to give the charity those benefits later on down the road. So When you think about doing something like that, anything that you have that's highly appreciated, so whether it be stock, maybe it's crypto, maybe not so much crypto these days, just like a highly appreciated, a lot of times you wind up seeing that with a highly appreciated business, you know, so someone who's trying to have a succession plan, you know, it's probably important if you have any sort of charitable intent that you think through this whole thing before you wind up selling your business. Because if you're able to put the shares of your business or put the shares that are highly appreciated, you know, in, say, Microsoft or something like that, into this charitable remainder trust, you now escape the capital gains tax that you would have paid on the way out. And you wind up getting an immediate tax deduction on the way in.
Yeah, and particularly if you live in a high tax state like we do in California, where the income tax rate is 13.3, if you add 13.3 to roughly about a 24% long-term capital gains tax, you're talking about almost 37 to 40%. Because, you know, I can think of one particular client we had that we helped them orchestrate the sale of their company to another public company. So it was simply a stock exchange. There was no taxes. But then what we did is we transferred those shares into a charitable remainder trust that would provide income for him and his wife during their lifetime at a 5% distribution rate. And then more importantly, by transferring it to a charitable remainder trust, we got a large tax deduction that we phased and used over a 3 or 4 year period that was used to offset taking money out of his IRA so we could drain his IRA and get it over to the personal side and use that charitable deduction as an offset on that income. So it's just amazing the number of issues out there that can be planned for when you at least start planning prior to these events taking place. You have so much more flexibility and you don't get caught with what I call the gotcha tax, where, oh my goodness, I never thought about that. But then it's too late.
Yeah. And Jim, there too, a lot of times when people wind up starting to think about charitable planning too, it's not as though they want to disinherit their kids or the people that they love. So sometimes maybe it's that charitable trust that they wind up having, but, you know, a portion of that income, maybe they wind up using that and they purchase a life insurance policy inside of a life insurance trust. So they have something to go ahead and replace that winds up being tax-free to their kids because they want to make sure that they take care of them too.
Why don't you talk about that and talk about the ILET? Because between charitable remainder trusts, foundations, and ILETs and charitable lead trust are one of the ways you see large wealthy families pass on their estate in the business to their heirs. Because when you think about it, how do the Fords or the Rockefellers or some of these large families that started very successful S&P 500 companies maintained their ownership of those large estates when they're billionaires?
Yeah, I mean, much of the planning, I mean, like those are exceptionally large estates where they're probably doing some more foundational planning and such. But I think for those who might have some sort of an estate tax issue, potentially, you know, that that $10 million client that maybe has a $5 million life insurance policy, if they own that outright and individually, their estate now, when they wind up passing away, has gone from $10 million to $15 million. But if they do some planning around that, they could put that same $5 million policy inside of a life insurance trust, and that would go estate tax free to their kids, thus like giving them extra funds to, if they do wind up having that estate tax issue, at least that $5 million is there that winds up being estate tax free for them.
So as we conclude here, Aaron, I think, why don't we talk about key retirement dates that people should be aware of if they're, you know, planning for retirement? I think of age 50, when basically you can start adding additional contributions to 401k plans. Age 55, you can start taking money out of a 401k plan upon retirement. We have age 59 and a half, where you can take money out of an IRA without a penalty. And then, you know, we have ages like age 67, full retirement benefits, age 70, where they stop increasing your benefits if you delay it, and then age 72. So ideally, I think what we're trying to tell our listeners here, you need to have a plan at least, Aaron, what would you say, a good 10 years before you head into retirement, so you know exactly what that retirement's going to look like, the type of taxes you're going to face, what your income needs are, your Social Security needs, but have yourself a plan so you don't get caught up with events that, oh my goodness, I didn't know that that was going to hit me. You know, the what I call the gotcha taxes that surprise so many people.
Well, I mean, it's the woulda, coulda, shoulda of financial planning. And if you're not staying on top of it, whether it's, you know, early on in your career when you're working years while you have kids in the house, or if it's, you know, later on while the kids are gone and you're trying to prepare for retirement, there's a lot of moves that you can make. And I don't think a financial plan is necessarily a one and done kind of a thing, because there's moves that you can make in any given year that might really help you out. And if you don't take advantage of it, I mean, it's lost and gone.
Yeah. And that's the point that we want to emphasize here. Let's say you do have a retirement plan, a financial plan that leads you into retirement. That plan is going to change throughout your retirement years. You'll probably live between spouses 20 to 25 years in retirement. And I guarantee you about every 4 years, the tax laws are going to change, or your personal circumstances may change. The markets may change.
Look back on what's happened in the last 3 years, right? I mean, a lot of people have gone from, I don't think I can retire, to now all the markets have done really well, to I really do want to retire. So now the markets have pulled back and saying, should I really have retired? So it's the markets are constantly changing. Tax laws are constantly changing. When we wind up doing a plan, I know exactly that the plan is not going to work out exactly the way that it's written, because things are going to change over the next few decades while we're working together.
Yeah, and that's the important thing. It's just like every year you go see your doctor for your annual physical. The same thing is true if you have a financial plan. It needs to be updated. It needs to be reviewed every year. Are we on track? Have the markets changed? Have your personal circumstances changed? And then you adapt, and it's flexible. So, Aaron, as we conclude, if our listeners would like to get a hold of you for financial planning advice, how could they do so?
Sure. You can reach out to the office directly, 858-487-3939, or you can email me at aaron.wiegman@financialsense.com. That's aaron.wiegman@financialsense.com.
All right. Well, listen, Aaron, thanks for joining us on the program. Come back again.
Will do.
That concludes our topic for today, pre-retirement planning. And folks, do yourself a favor. You don't want to get hit with those gotcha taxes. I mean, as Aaron just mentioned, as we were closing, look at all the things that have changed in the last 3 years. Tax laws, the virus, the shutdowns, the markets going up, the markets going down. Now we have inflation where we didn't have. All of that is changing. But more importantly, when you have a plan, it helps you navigate it. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.